I think one thing we want to talk about out of the gate when we're talking about pre-script, the D10.
The D10. If you guys are in, man, they have these all over the country. But the one coming up that you guys will see us at in San Francisco, I believe it's October 14th.
I believe so,
Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah.
I think there's one in Chicago, New York.
Houston, New York, Chicago, and I think maybe Boston. That's the next calendar year. Yeah. The D10 is a charity, so they're pairing up with Lucille Packard's Children's Hospital at Stanford University. So go to their website, donate. We'll be on field. We'll be in the D10 house. If any of our listeners are going to be there, come by, say hi to the pre-script team, i.e. me and Jordan. So we'll be on field with them during the event Saturday, October 14th. So be sure to check that out. While you're at it, check out prescript.com.
Yeah.
PRE-SCRIPT.com.
Thank you.
We're not going down that rabbit hole again.
No.
Check it out. Some new programs coming in the next couple weeks.
Yeah.
So keep an eye on that. We should be fully switched over to our new website as well. So there's going to be a ton of new content. Make sure to check out YouTube and Instagram. If you guys have questions, info@prescript.com. Again, that's PRE-SCRIPT.com.
Yeah.
Let's get into it. Today's episode.
All right. Today we're going to talk about training through injuries or training with injuries.
Yeah. Now, this is really common because I think people make the mistake when they get hurt. They address like, okay, there's some sort of imbalance. I don't have the requisite mobility or stability. So what they do is they pull training out all together. And I think that leads them down a road of like maybe not the expedited recovery that they expect. I think being able to scale stimulus effectively is kind of the name of the game when it comes to rehabbing from injuries and working through injuries.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. It makes me a little bit upset inside when I talk to people and they say, oh yeah, I have a bad knee, so I don't work out anymore.
You know what makes me more upset than that?
What's that?
When they have a bad knee and a doctor tells them to stop lifting.
Oh,
right?
Gosh,
that's the worst.
Worse.
Yeah, then that's just, what you're going to get a lot.
Your knee's going to hurt forever. Just sit around and wait to die.
Yeah, because that's the thing. It's like, your knee hurts when does your knee hurt? Hurts when I'm lifting. Okay, stop lifting. It's like, avoiding provocation is not treatment.
Yeah.
I think that's like something that a lot of people need to drill into their heads is like, say it hurts when you're squatting, but then it gets to a point where your knee hurts when you're walking.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, you put yourself in a smaller and smaller box to the point where now you can't even put one foot in front of the other rather than addressing that exercise, addressing the imbalance, working around it, and then returning that back to that main movement as like an objective measure of progress from the rehabilitation that you've put into your altered training.
So let's get started with how you guys can still train with an injury. The first thing I'm going to say is, okay, so we figured out when it hurts when we do certain movements. Say, you know, just to stick with the same example, my knee hurts when I squat. Okay, well, maybe we do take some time off of squatting just to figure out what's going on there. Let that inflammation, that acute inflammation go down. I'm not talking about, you know, 2 months. I'm talking about maybe a week, maybe 2 weeks. Let that inflammation kind of subside. In that meantime, what we can do is work on other things, start to fill other holes that we might have in our training, right? Whether you're a powerlifter, a CrossFitter, a weightlifter, there are other things that you can be working on if you can't go through a certain range of motion. And usually when we have an injury, it's going to be, you know, we'll say upper or lower body, right? Usually if we have an upper body injury, a lot of times we can work around that by doing lower body work, right? If we have a lower body injury, we can work around that by doing upper body work. And a lot of the things that we can do, we can usually incorporate some sort of core work with that.
I'm going to take a step back because I think the starting point, I want to make this like almost like a bullet point list they can start with, is understanding the mechanism of injury first, right? Mm-hmm. So, because I think... So there's a quote, I think it was Seinfeld, and he may have been quoting someone else, but it's pain is knowledge really fast, right? It's now a very acute awareness of something that you've been doing wrong. What the fuck is going on here? Jesus. Goddamn pickup truck driving right through the studio here. Pain is knowledge really fast. So I think if you ignore this opportunity to to actually like understand an imbalance that has led you down this road, you're going to frequently and habitually go down this road. So understanding the mechanism of injury before you set out and like program a plan to work around the pain is like step number one. So like really common one with squatting, SI joint pain.
Yep.
And it's like, okay, if you're just looking to like rehab your SI and don't think why you injured your SI to begin with, it's like you're just setting yourself up for failure. And what people do is they rehab themselves in a way where it gives them a false sense of confidence to load, and then they go back in and start loading heavier, and then that injury gets worse and worse and compounds every single time. So before we sort of go down that road of altering your training, understand why you got hurt in the first place, and then tailor your altered training to address the underlying imbalances. Like Platform Ready program, the one that we put together for powerlifters, is just that. It's like everyone thinks squat, bench, and dead is like this all-encompassing functional, like it's upper body, it's lower body, it's push, it's pull, it's strength. Yes, he's raising his hand.
I do not think that.
Okay. Yeah, no. But maybe you talk to the average powerlifter and they think that it's a balanced sport. And it's like there's no sports are balanced, right? Like it's not like you're playing chess. It's really, you know, you're aggressively loading into external rotation of your hips, you're aggressively loading internal rotation of your shoulders when you bench, and then demanding them to be in an externally rotated position. It's really discontinuous one lift from the other. And if you only are training full range of motion of those three lifts, your joints are missing a huge potential for the actual individual joints' range of motion under load. So that was the whole purpose behind the program, is seeing the potential downfalls. Because if you're powerlift, you squat, bench, and dead. So it's easy more or less to have a predictive factor as far as like where things are going to go wrong under heavy enough loads. So that was the whole point with the Platform Ready program, was to help people go down, like not even have to go down that road to get injured in the first place, but also a good roadmap to help get you out of pain when you are injured. Because again, if you got injured, it's probably a heavy load and a squat, bench, or dead. So there's a predictive value there. All right, so we're mechanism of injury, understand why you got hurt, yeah. Understand that you don't have to just stop training altogether. And then from there, it's mapping out a plan. Now, I wanted to talk about stimulus.
Yeah.
Right? Let's try and list as many stimulus as we can. Is it stimuli?
Stimuli?
Is it stimuli?
That's bold. That's
a little like Dexter's Laboratory. A solid maybe. Definitely. 60% of the time, it works every time. So I want to name off all the stimulus that we can think of right now that to progress and regress around injuries.
Yeah.
So let's go macro to micro.
Okay.
So training frequency, right? How many days you train a week, that can be altered. Yeah. Training style,
yeah.
Right? Like if you're an endurance runner and you're getting hurt and all you do is train for like long distances and you're getting like fucking stress fractures, or you're getting shin splints, or you have foot issues, it's like maybe take a step out of shit. Even Jordan played baseball in the bigs, right? Like even he went from basketball to baseball. So like maybe switch up your discipline and draw strength from resistance training. Go Olympic lifting, do a hypertrophy block. And same thing with, you know, your fat powerlifter, right? If you come off a meet and you've just been like killing it meet after meet, year after year, it's like go do like a bodybuilding, air quote bodybuilding hypertrophy block, or work on like
I was hoping you'd say
metabolic
yoga.
Conditioning.
I was hoping you said yoga, metabolic conditioning.
Well, I just think too, it's like you're gonna get stronger by utilizing benefits from various training styles. Because the second you pigeonhole yourself, because it's like these altruistic powerlifters would be like, oh yeah, I'm going to like front squat for like 6 weeks after my meet and like really mix it up, like get away from the low bar. It's like, get away from the barbell.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like there's such a potential to draw from other stimulus, right? And absolutely, from a big macro scale, I think that's a big one for regardless of your discipline. That's a really good one to draw from, is like mix up training styles.
Something I love too is CrossFitters get a lot of time, you know, you're saying pigeonholed, they get so focused on, even though we do a lot of stuff in CrossFit, they get so focused on I have to be in the gym.
Yeah.
Right? Get outside of the gym and do something. You guys can do some great low impact stuff. I think swimming is a great, for a lot of things, it can be a great rehab. You're not weight bearing, you're still moving. You know, it's hard as shit to breathe underwater. So
hard not to breathe when you're not underwater.
But just get outside of the gym, do some things, ride a bike, go for a hike, things like that. Get, you know, switch that stimulus up completely. You don't have to be, you know, under a barbell to be recovering.
And I think too with that is like there's a psychological recovery too. And I'm not talking like nervous system recovery. I think that gets covered in decreasing frequency or switching training styles. Yeah. But like if you don't love to train anymore, like when you walk into the gym and it's a fucking chore, like you and it's this point will be reached with different people. Like some people are, I've never had this happen. Like I've had days where, like yesterday I ate a box of Tim Tams, which all the Australian listeners, big shout out. I don't know how you guys are. I don't know how there's any other weight class but super heavyweight in like Australia. Cause they're so, but I was like, I was tired. I did not want to train. I just wanted to sleep. Ate a box of Tim Tams and went and front squatted. And it turned out it was pretty good. But it's like, if you get to the point where you just like, you see the gym and you're cringing,
yeah,
get away from it, man. Like,
and that's a great point too, because a lot of times that can lead to injury.
Yeah.
If you're not in it, if you're in a mental fog and you're trying to go through, you know, hit these program percentages, which you might not be mentally ready for, that's a great way to hurt yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you kind of got to be aware and like psychologically available when you're in the gym. So what we covered so far from a stimuli standpoint, training frequency, actual like exercise style, we could
what you're doing,
intensity is an obvious one.
Yeah, volume, those things are pretty standard. They're gonna go down when you're injured, anyways.
Now I think we can get a little bit more into the micro as far as like exercise selection.
Yeah.
Right. Like you talk back squat. We have on Prescript YouTube, we have a progression for back squatting rehabilitation for hips and low back.
Yeah.
It's like, all right, yeah, you're low bar squatting and it's starting to hurt. Well, maybe try counterbalance, try goblet, try front, try safety, try. Yeah. I'm not a big Zercher guy. What's your thought on the Zercher squat?
It's just a weird thing. I've done them messing around. I've never done them for reals. Like, and I don't think I ever want
to. Did you say for reals? Yeah. Like with an S, like a plural?
For real?
Yeah, no, but no, like, no. I don't know
it's
if the elbow.
With a Z.
Is it?
Z.
Okay. And I've noticed, and I don't know if this, maybe it's like a sign, that people comment on my things and they use the word thick. But with two C's, right. And I'm like, I don't know how to, like, did they just call me fat on Instagram? Like, I don't know what that means.
That's a compliment.
Is it? But it's like, and like, I see it in two places. I see it on like pictures of me and then like pictures of like single women. And it's like, I don't know if I want to be grouped. I mean, all power to you. Like, I don't want to piss anyone off, but it's like, I don't see the other, like, the correlation. It's just, I don't know, maybe it's a hip-to-weight ratio thing. I don't know how it works, but it's like... It's
Tim Tams.
It's the Tim Tams making me extra thick with two C's. Okay, so exercise selection. Then we can get into, and I think the exercise selection, the big one is understanding the mechanism, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
If you don't understand the mechanism, you can make things worse, right? Like, say you have pain in your low back when you're high bar squatting, and you go, oh... I'm going to try low bar. It's like, no. Because if the mechanism is like the shear force through the low back, you're going to want to pick an exercise that's going to minimize that and still load the quad. So move that load forward. Or like deadlifts, it's like hurts deadlifting off the floor. I know I'm going to pull from a deficit. It's like maybe pull from blocks and then progress that stimulus down. So I think a lot of this will double back to understanding like, okay, the severity and the mechanism. It's like, oh, should I change my stimulus and increase my frequency? It's like, yeah, hopefully that's intuitive and you know better. Or like change your volume. So let's see, to recap, we're exercise selection, training style. What was the first one we did? Exercise selection, training style.
Frequency,
there you go. Yeah. Now I think we get into... like actual
fun stuff.
The fun stuff. I'm thinking like tempo.
Yeah.
I think tempo is a big one.
Yeah, tempo is great. I like the idea of doing unilateral stuff. We talk about this a lot in Prescript. We do a lot of this stuff. Doing unilateral stuff, doing things with dumbbells, kettlebells, bands, taking you away from that barbell to really address unilateral joint stability.
And I think too with that, it's like even unilateral joints, because I'm a big like, people come at me like, oh yeah, I do stability stuff all the time. I do single leg press. It's like, okay, all right. No, you very well don't. But the idea of like, I mean, whenever I talk and people that have followed us for a while will know, like if I'm doing like a Bulgarian split squat or a single leg RDL, loading weight, if stability is the overarching goal, loading weight as a stimulus of progression of instability. So i.e. load one hand with a dumbbell, don't load both. But even still, it's like, if you're not squatting like a main movement, like you're rehabbing an injury and you can't train strength as best as you'd like to, like with putting a bar on your back, then yeah, put two dumbbells in each hand and then do a Bulgarian split squat. I'm not like averse to that. Yeah. It's just when I'm in training and I need, and I can back squat, I don't need to be training another strength or resistance movement on top of that, where it's like you're kind of being redundant there. And right. Plus, it's like if I'm back squatting 500-600 pounds and then I have 250-pound dumbbells in my hand, how much stimulus is that on my quads compared to the 500 pounds on my back when I'm squatting? So it's like when I'm healthy, I keep my stability drills, load them for stability is the progression, and then I have my strength work for the heavier movements to stimulate strength adaptations or hypertrophy. But when I'm hurt and I don't have that ability to load that 500 pounds, now all of a sudden I can take that stability drill that I was loading with one hand. Now it's self-limiting. Even with 50 pounds in one hand or 50 pounds in both hands, that's only 100 pounds, right? That's a fifth of the overall load on the entire system if I was going from squatting 500 to not squatting at all. So what you can literally do a progression of stimulus in a set, where it's like you can go load the resistance first, 50-pound dumbbells in each hand, do split squats. Then as you fail, drop one dumbbell, and then now we're loading that stability under the fatigue prime movers of the quads and the hamstrings in that split squat position and stuff like that. So Josh Bryant talks about this, and it's in one of his books way back. And it's almost, I've called it like functional drop sets. He'll use a term, I forget the term, but it's basically this idea of like, you know, use range of motion as a stimulus, right? You can't bench press heavy, but your shoulders hurt when it's weight dependent, right? So it's like, I'm good up to like a certain percentage and then my shoulder starts to hurt. It's like, all right, go to dumbbells. So we exercise selection as the stimulus variation. Then within that, who says we just have to do one stimulus. Now we can go, all right, we'll go flat press with like 60-pound dumbbells. If that's not painful, do a set there. Next set, kick it up an incline. Now you're on a slight incline with 60-pound dumbbells, a little bit harder. Kick it up another incline. Now you're at like a 45 degree with 60-pound dumbbell until you work that all the way overhead. So you're getting pressing work in. You're using exercise selection and intensity as a variable, and then you're also using range of motion as a variable to regress and train around the injury. So it's like you can still load the movement of pressing through various degrees of shoulder flexion, but you don't have to load that high-end weight that's going to cause you pain like you would be able to in the bench. So the idea of loading self-limiting exercises is going to give your joints a break. It's going to give your nervous system a break.
Yeah, absolutely. I know.
What happened? I blacked out. But no, I really fucking, because that's one thing Josh talks about all the time, is this like stimulus. There's adaptations to stimulus and understanding as many as you can, because I feel like we're going to miss some. But just understanding that that's all your body knows. Like I give you a 10-pound dumbbell and tell you, I want you to do 10 curls, but I want it to take 5 minutes. So you got to go through like 30-second concentric, 30-second eccentric, you won't be able to lift your arm for like a week.
Oh, absolutely. Right? Absolutely.
So we took the stimulus of tempo and traded that in to increase the overall input stimulus, but we're actually lowering all the other stimulus, but we're counterbalancing to a point where it's actually harder than it would be if we just kept all the normal variables the same. I'm going to grab a drink of water. Okay.
I'm going to give you a break, and I'm going to start to something that you started to hint on was range of motion, right? A lot of the reason that people will get injured in the first place is because they don't have the requisite range of motion to be doing the movements they're trying to do,
yeah.
Right? So they're trying to get into a range of motion and load a range of motion that they may not necessarily have, so it puts them into a sacrifice position. Mm. So if that's the case, then this is a great time, as we have that injury, to take a step back. Again, assess why that injury happened, and then from that point, what we need to do is address that range of motion deficit that we have, right? So say we got into a sacrifice knee alignment position, we hurt our MCL because we don't have proper rotation in our hips as we're squatting, right? So there are plenty of things that you can do to increase that rotation that's not gonna put any load or any stress on that knee, that will then later on benefit you as that tissue heals, right? So it's those some of those static stretches or some of those dynamic like PNF sort of drills that we use, myofascial work, stuff like that. You can do all that stuff without loading that knee in a way that's going to increase inflammation or make that injury any worse. But it's still going to benefit you down the line as we get back to moving through our normal range of motion.
And I think, too, like that's a good time. Like pain is knowledge really fast. I think getting out of pain, like if it's in a, like a, maybe not a chronic state, but it's constant, you constantly feel your injury all day, implementing those correctives, like what you said with like the neuromuscular, the myofascial stuff or the corrective exercise, index that. I think this is such a huge point that I try and make with everyone I work with, like all the personalized programming I do on Prescript, is like, I want you to index how these make you feel, right? Like it's a totally fluid medium. Like we can drag and drop in from our library one of like thousands of different correctives that you can try. But the idea is like, we can't do all the thinking for you. It's like, we can interpret the information you give us. And I mean, our intake forms are really like elaborate. It's like, you know, how do you squat? What kind of style of lifting do you, how long you've been lifting for, lifestyle history, all these different factors that we put in. And then we, from there, can formulate a plan, but it's not set in stone, right? So it's like, going off how you feel and how each one of these drills responds. But the last thing is like, you know, some of our programs 4 to 6 weeks, but the takeaway from it is like, okay, now I have all these different drills I know how to do correctly. Now, how can I input these moving forward? Because the idea with mobility and stability stuff is less is more. Like I used to be, when I first really started diving into this, I used to take forever warming up because I used to hit all the high points every single time. Yeah. Now I have like the shortest warm ups when it comes to actually like getting underneath a bar, because I've retained over time strength in these end ranges of motion that my body just isn't fighting me to get there anymore. But you know, dude, we've both been on planes like crazy in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah.
You know, I just, dude, sitting in coach destroys me. Like, dang, absolutely. You know what drives me nuts though? Wow. It's like we'll get off the plane, my wife and I, and she'll be like, oh God, it was so bad. I'm like, you're like 100 pounds less than me. That's like sitting in first class. Like that's literally you sitting in a coach seat, like my pure shoulder width is like me sitting in first class. So you don't get to complain. You can complain about a lot of other shit, but you don't get to complain about that. But it's like, so now, but because I've been able to index and internalize how each one of these corrective movements I've done over, you know, a decade of training, how it's going to improve that overarching goal of, I want my squat to feel better. I want it to be efficient. I want it to be in good positions and I want to be able to get there confidently. I know now what drills I need to implement based off how I feel. Mm-hmm. So it's like, oh, okay, yeah, my knee is kind of bugging me a little bit. Oh, I know why my knee is bugging me, because I've had this before. I've done 10,000 freaking correctives. Now I just do this and then go squat my next warm-up set and we're cool.
Yep.
Right? So I think a lot of people just take this responsibility and this onus on with training. Like, oh man, like I really saw benefit to doing like safety bar squats my last training cycle. Those really felt good as far as like carryover into my main movements. After my next meet, I'm going to do that again. But it's like, if you keep that mindset of like internalizing how your body responds to stimulus, whether it's a strength adaptation or a mobility or stability adaptation, making sure that we can have that process and prioritizing that as something you should work on and being able to make yourself more efficient is going to end up getting you further than knowing that the safety bar squat made your upper back stronger. Because at the end of the day, what's really going to slow you down when you get to start reaching your potential and strength is going to be these underlying injuries. So being able to see how these correctives can adapt your perception of these movements is such a huge thing in like preventing injuries in the future. Did I black out again?
I think so.
Okay, all right.
But yeah.
Now let's talk about... No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, it's a good point, is that, yes, you can have someone spoon feed this stuff to you, but if you're not internalizing, you're not really thinking about what it's doing, how it's changing your body, then it's not going to be much benefit to it in the future. So it's learning from these exercises, learning from these injuries, or you know, this rehab of this injury that's really going to make you grow in the future.
I want to ask you now about some of the injuries you've had, some unfortunate spike ball mishaps.
Oh man,
some freak accidents. You know, shooting guns in PA with the hillbillies.
Yeah.
Now, break down for me, like maybe just one that sticks in your mind as an injury that you've had, and whether it's, you know, from lifting or from outside of lifting, and then how you've worked around it.
Yeah, that's a
good one. Or even, you have anything chronic? I think that'll speak to more people.
Let's see, do I have anything chronic? Not really.
No.
To be honest, I'm pretty lucky.
Residual head damage.
Yeah, just a little bit of brain damage throughout. Really? But I'm pretty healthy overall.
Okay, then let's go into the time. Yeah. I could go the chronic route. I got shit.
All right, you take care of that. I'll talk about the worst acute injury that I think I've had. And it's actually from lifting. This is when I was a less experienced lifter.
Yeah.
I was just kind of like, yeah, let's just lift a ton of heavy weight. It was actually deadlifting. I sprained an SI joint.
Not fun.
No, not fun at all. It was terrible. I couldn't sit. I couldn't stand.
It was bad.
Yeah, it was bad. I could lay down. That's about it. Moving was hard. Driving, anything really.
Walking. How long ago was this?
I'd say about 5 years.
So before you came out to Cali?
Yeah, it was right around that time.
Okay, I gotcha.
Yeah, right around that time. But, yeah, it's an SI sprain, if it's bad enough, is really, you can't do anything.
No.
Yeah, it takes you out of, you know, you can't lift, you can't lift.
You can barely walk.
Yeah, man. Exactly.
And that's the thing, people, I mean, I'm going to go off too much of a tangent, but people, like, really, for the longest time, discounted the SI joint as, like, a functional joint. They just thought it was, like, this pseudo joint that didn't move. It's like, all right, sprain it, see what happens, yeah. Tell me it's not a joint.
Yeah. So that was one where I actually did have to take a step back, and there wasn't much I could do at first.
So here. Oh, okay. Fucking fireworks. What did you do to treat it? Who'd you go see?
I went through chiropractic.
Oh, yes.
I did. Yes.
Yeah. And well, I think, because here's the deal. All the stimulus that we've talked about progressing and regressing right now has all been internal.
Yeah.
Right? And internal stimulus is a lot more... it's a lot more demand on your body than external, right? Like, to change the length of your IT band externally, like on a cadaver, takes like 1,000 pounds per square inch of pressure, right? So that was like research they did about, okay, is foam rolling really adding length to the ITB? It's like, no. So think of that external stimulus, 1,000 pounds. But if we flex our TFL, or our TFL acts on that ITB, then we do get a relative change of length, but it can pull on that, and it doesn't need to call on 1,000 pounds. So it's like, when you get hurt, you need to understand the scope of stimulus lies outside of just your internal capabilities. If you get so fucked up that you can't move, then delegate that stimulus to an external, which is going to be a lot more, and then carry that spectrum. It's almost like, like seeing light, right? Like looking at the electromagnetic spectrum. There's stuff we can't see that exists, right? Like we can't see radio waves, but it literally lies on the same spectrum as visible light. So it's just as our spectrum of internal stimulus is on one side, there are things that exist from a stimulus standpoint on either sides of that. The internal stimulus is going to be at a higher frequency, a stronger, more obvious thing. But as you get hurt, and it's like you can't do such small internal stimulus things like walking, moving, living, but we can go further in the spectrum of stimulus and have passive modalities sort of get us to the point where we can start doing these really small things in our visible field, in our spectrum, and then we start employing some of the things we talked about before. So a little plug for our own offices, for our own practice there. But I think that's such a huge point, because understanding that once you get to a certain point, it's like you can take the reins, right? And that's the domain in which Prescript lives in. It's like we can take you anytime you are able to take your own internal stimulus and carry that out. We can progress you through that spectrum. But knowing when to get out of that spectrum and have an external stimulus get you to that starting point to work through.
Exactly. And that's just the difference between active and passive modalities, right?
Yeah.
So it's, you know, I couldn't do shit for myself, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to have someone do something to me that's going to make me get closer to that point where I can start doing things to stabilize my body, right? And that's exactly what we do, is we try to blur the lines between that, right? There's always going to be that one end of the spectrum where, yeah, if you break your arm, you're not going to, you know, stabilize that with some wrist curls.
Yeah, you're going
right?
to need some you're external need cast, stimulus.
But from that point, once you get that cast off, that's what we're doing, is we're taking that from, you know, from ground zero. It hurts just to move that arm to small progressions to getting you back to doing, you know, whatever it is.
How much was the deadlift?
Jerking. Oh man, it was a 345 bar. I think we went for max reps.
Okay, how many?
I think it was like 14 or something.
Okay, how many you got now?
A lot more than that.
Yeah, and have you sprained?
Yeah. And I will keep my joints intact.
You did what? 500 for a double?
Yeah, I just hit a 500 double.
At what body weight?
175.
Feel it.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's good because, I mean, obviously you have the knowledge to learn from that mechanism of injury and prevent it down the future. So here we have like a 345 for 14, which, I mean, is pretty solid for like, and you probably weren't even a buck 70 back then,
that's
right?
That's probably a little lighter than.
Yeah, those are your Jack and Tan days.
Yeah, that's it.
Oh, God, that greasy pitcher. It's going off somewhere. When Prescripts and Websites up, I'm going to put that.
Yeah.
Stage.
That'd be the welcome.
We'll go like platform ready and then we'll have a stage ready program. Yeah. And it'll just be nothing but bikini wax and a tannic. It'll be fucking awesome.
And I'll have my diet plan in there.
Yeah, yeah.
Which will just guarantee to get diabetes.
Jesus Christ. Yeah, but I think that's a really good point to touch on. Like, that you had that thing. You went through a full spectrum of stimulus and went something that up to this point we hadn't even touched on, where it's you have to go totally external. Yeah. Have someone else apply the stimulus for you, which by and large will always be less when in a physical rehabilitation setting, less than the stimulus you can apply on yourself. And then on the other end of that is going to be your surgeries. That's when you're going into the knife. That is way more fucking stimulus than you cannot, you can draw a knife on yourself. I wouldn't recommend it.
Probably don't.
But what side would you rather be on, right? How long did it take you to get back?
I'd say within 6 weeks, I was moving through full range of motion.
Yeah.
Probably within 10, I was starting to get under load.
Yeah.
And then as, you know, in smaller increments, I would increase that.
And
but
to me, like from a maybe a preventative model, it's like I'd much rather go on a semi-frequent basis to regress my stimulus to see where I'm at, like go see a chiro once every 2 weeks. Like if you're lifting heavy, chiro, PT, something like that, because I'd rather accumulate my stimulus there than neglect that.
Mm-hmm.
Neglect, you know, that spectrum in which like Prescript works through of like movement, and then end up on the far opposite side of the spectrum where you got to go into the fucking knife.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Exactly. The best cure is always prevention.
Yeah, no,
so
definitely.
If you never let it happen, then you're not going to have to go through that regression.
Yeah. Right? So back under the bar, full bore, 10 weeks.
I'd say 10 to 12.
Yeah.
I was slow moving in the beginning.
Yeah.
But once I started getting progress, it started moving pretty well.
Yeah. Once you sort of switched over from that external to internal stimulus,
you can
start moving yourself.
Yeah. And here I am 5 years later. Like I said before, no nagging, no chronic injuries, stronger than I've ever been.
Yeah.
So that's kind of a testament to me. Learning from my experience and then taking that and continuing to build on that knowledge.
Now, that was before you'd gone through chiropractic college. Give yourself that same injury today, knock on wood. What you know now, to the same severity, you can get to the internal stimulus part just as quick, but once you take over the reins, do you think you can shave time off that rehab?
Absolutely. And I think a huge part of that too is because of what I've done to this point.
Yeah.
A large part of what I do, my accessory work, if you'll call it that, is just core stability. I feel that if I were to do the same, even the same mechanism, if it were at the same weight, it would be a much less of an injury.
Yeah.
Right. If we're at a heavier weight, maybe it would be the same thing.
Yeah.
But I think that my body can withhold a lot more now because of injuries like that along the way that I've learned from, and I've learned to stabilize my core, my body, and just my movement patterns are a lot better now.
Yeah.
So I think it would be a lot, the injury would be to a lot lesser degree, and the rehab would be quicker.
And that's the thing, one of the best preventative measures you can do from an injury standpoint is just being fucking strong.
Being strong, dude.
Just resilient as a motherfucker.
That's right.
And that's the thing, you talked about like knowing what you know now, and it's like, we can go back because getting strong doesn't just mean progressing the stimulus of weight, right? You want strong tendons, load different ranges of motion, load heavy eccentrics, load partial ranges of motion. Fuck, put a yoke on your back.
Yeah.
And go fucking walk.
Static holds.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to throw it back to Josh Bryant because like this is something I learned from him. Like, some of the like, strongman stuff, like farmer's walks. It's like, you know, we're loading heavy weight, but the range of motion is minimal. Right. But he's overshooting on one stimulus weight, undercutting on another stimulus range of motion. And then what are you getting? You're getting a high neural load and you're creating sort of you're reinforcing joints in that end range of motion without having to call upon that musculotendinous junction to stretch and contract, stretch and contract. So I think being strong, maybe strong is the wrong word because people will automatically attribute that to the stimulus of resistance, but just being resilient.
Like, absolutely. And I think that includes a lot of things. Strength is one of those things that it does include. Range of motion is another thing that it includes.
Endurance.
Stability.
I said that.
Yeah.
Weird.
All that through that full range of motion, right? That's when you're going to be resilient.
Yeah. It's be the supple water buffalo, man.
That's it.
Be the supple water buffalo.
Yeah.
Well, that was the thing. The first episode I think we did was like, it was pick your favorite animal.
Yeah.
And the water buffalo, man. That's where it's at. Okay. So that was your worst.
That was mine.
Okay.
Yeah. Let's talk about you. You say you
got I'm going to go the chronic route. Yeah. So I used to play hockey, back in Canada, go figure. And I was a goalie and I have a pretty bad meniscus tear in my right knee. Well, I had two actually. Fuck. I have meniscus tear in my right knee from being a goalie. It's kind of got like bowled over and my leg was just in a really valgus. My knee was in, my ankle was out and just tore my medial meniscus. So that's something I fight with all the time. And left shoulder.
Okay.
I was a fucking hood ornament for a Chevy Suburban 4 years ago, man. Just wasn't even looking, T-boned me in an intersection. I had like Mel Gibson Lethal Weapon 2, my shoulder back into place. So these are two, because these are structural injuries, right? Mm-hmm. And it's like, this is a point that I always try to make with like my seminars, is like you can outfunction bad structure. And that's like, and that's something I say for injuries, that's something I say about morphology. These fucking daddy long leg guys out there that blame their shitty squats on their morphology. It's like, no, you can outfunction that, man. It's like, I know guys that are like, you know, 6'5", 6'6", that can sit in an astrograph squat. They have enough rotation to outrun their need. Because like everyone talks about like these long femurs, like they're just like a head, nose, ears, and femurs. Like that's all their body is. It's like, dude, you're like, the inch longer than your femur is than my femur should not make a difference of your chest being on your fucking knees when you squat. Like, we're not that different. Why are you blaming your structure for bad function? So for me, the chronic one, I would say we'll keep it recent. Left shoulder, torn labrum, partially torn bicep tendon in my left shoulder. Now, this is where understanding the mechanism of injury is huge when it comes to acute trauma like that. Like, it's one thing to, like, have, like, a bit of rotator cuff pain and impingement. That's maybe easier to find resources to predict strengthening strategies, right? Like, I have impingement. What should you do? Oh, okay, you should strengthen your lower trap, you know, inhibit your upper trap, strengthen your rotator cuff muscle, get, like, humeral head depression, increase external rotation, increase scapular retraction and depression, increase thoracic extension. Like, that's an algorithm you can find pretty quickly for, like, these subacute injuries. But when a fucking 91 Suburban comes into your shoulder, and then you got to realize, okay, what does your labrum do? Right, now we got to dig a little bit deeper. What does your bicep tendon do, your long-handed bicep tendon? And then work on ways to circumvent those structural injuries with function. So my shoulder, it's like if I don't stay up on this stuff, man, I didn't have like blood flow to my hands for like 2 weeks. Like I was walking around school with like a sling and like my hands were just ice cold. I sweat putting my socks on in the morning. I haven't been ice cold since I've lived in Canada 5 years ago. So it's like, understanding that, okay, now on a day-to-day that I need to know that I need to strengthen the motion of flexion in my left shoulder because that long-headed biceps tendon isn't going to act as it should as a secondary flexor. So I do a lot of anterior delt work, a lot of bicep, long-headed bicep work. So I'm making sure I'm flexing the bicep in a flexed shoulder position. And that's something that I have to keep up on. And I'll always have to do that. Or I'll have to, you know, this is spectrum stuff, right? I'm right now, with bad structure, I'm still in the middle of that spectrum. I haven't gone under the knife. And hopefully if I can outfunction my structure, I'll never have to. I can keep it in that relative wavelength that we want to operate in without having to go. I mean, again, I do dip into the passive modality thing. I do get treated for my shoulder a lot because there will be like residual tightness that comes from that structural instability, but I don't want to have to go to the other end of the spectrum at any point and go under the knife and get stuff reattached and shaved and scoped and all that stuff. So that's one that I fight with all the time. And it's, It's chronic. Yeah, deal with it. Shit happens. But I think a lot of people, when they go that route, if you don't have the knowledge behind it, then you're just immediately just going to jump to the other end of the spectrum.
Yeah.
And it's like, because, I mean, if I didn't know what I knew, this happened maybe first year of college or first year of chiropractic college. Even at that point, I was like uncertain, like, do I need surgery or not? But knowing what I knew at that point, I was like, no. I know the mechanism of injury. I know it's not necessary. And that's the thing. That's always a card you can play, right? But it's catastrophic. There's no coming back from that. You can do PT and all that and chiro as that stimulus first. You can go the corrective exercise, but progress through the spectrum. Don't just, because you're ignorant to the anatomy, jump all the way down to the knife. Because it's like, some of these surgeries, man, are like Lay's potato chips. Like, you can't have just one. Like, how many females I know with ACL surgeries that I know more that have had multiple than I know that have had just one.
Yeah.
Right. And so it's like, it's not the be all end all you think it's going to be, but the armed with the right knowledge, you can stay away from that end of the spectrum.
Absolutely. I know.
That was deep.
I know.
That was a lot.
Yeah. I think a necessary topic, because, you know, we talk about injury prevention and that's one of our big selling points. And I do think that correct movement and moving correctly are the best way to go from preventing injuries. But at the high end, man, like when you're fourth and long, when you're third attempt, when you're at the fucking, you know, when you're at the CrossFit games, you leave it all out there, man. Like, your mental side can override anything physical, but it's how you pick up the pieces after.
Yeah, that's right. Injury can always happen in sport, but it shouldn't be happening in training, but it can always happen, you know, game day, right? So it's good to be able to react to it with some knowledge and have a good recovery plan.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Think about it before it happens.
Absolutely. Right?
Just like this idea of like rehearsal. Like, don't just like be reactive, be proactive. Like, if this, then that.
Yeah.
Right? Like, if I get hurt, what would I do? Do I have a chiropractor, a PT I work with regularly? Do I have someone that knows the demands of my lift? No. Get one. So you don't need to find one. Be ready so you don't have to get ready.
Yeah.
Right? That's gas station. I'm so stoked off this, man. I'm just going to be quoting Josh Bryan for days now. But yeah, I think that's a good resource for people to understand, is like the spectrum of stimulus, I guess, would be the main takeaway.
Yep.
And then how to manipulate yourself within that spectrum and progress yourself within that spectrum based off every variable of stimulus that you can think of.
Absolutely. And if you guys need some help with that, that's what we're here for.
That's what we do.
www.pre-script.com. S-C-R-I-V-T.
And this is Prescript Radio.
Prescript Radio.
Yeah.
Guys, check out the personalized programs. You can work with one of us, one-on-one individually. And we'll keep you guys injury free.
iTunes.
Yeah. Give Subscribe. Us that 5-star rating.
Share. You know, I feel like we ask too much all the time. Today, let's just go reviews.
All right.
Don't subscribe if you haven't already. Just leave a review. I mean, we see the numbers. There's a huge discrepancy between the people that leave reviews and the people that listen.
Yep.
So it's like, just review the damn thing.
Show us that you love us.
Yeah, exactly. No one else does. Why do you think we continue to do this?
We only do this for some love.
Yeah. But on that note, I think that we'll call it that for today.
That's it.
If you guys have any topics you want to hear, make sure to shoot us an email, info@pre-script.com. Right. I'd like to thank Kyle Lundy, Lunderjack Productions, for always making us sound better, not smart. I don't think he's not a miracle worker.
Quality better.
Yeah. And Engine Fitness.
Check him out. He's code RXD Radio. We'll have to fix that.
We'll have to fix that one.
Yeah. But, and then if you guys are in San Francisco, it's October, check out D10. Give some money to a good cause and come hang out with us.
Yeah. All right, guys. We'll see you next time.
See you guys.